everybody. Welcome to episode 437 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another San Diego Soundbites episode. It's an interview I did with artist Dean Haspiel at San Diego Comic-Con 2018. Specifically, we were talking about the upcoming 10th anniversary edition of The Alcoholic, which is a graphic novel critically acclaimed from writer Jonathan Ames, illustrated by Dean Haspiel. And Dean and I sat down and talked about how the story is more relevant than ever, dealing with issues of identity, you know, trying to find out who you are in the world, weakness, addiction, self-doubt. But at the heart of the story, it's a very human story of just battling this addiction of alcoholism. So again, I think it's a really poignant story in a way, and a sad story in a way. And Dean himself talks about how in the world of comics today, even more so than 10 years ago, it's much easier for a story like this to find an audience. There's a more diverse selection of stories, I guess you'd say, than ever before. So maybe it's going to be even more well received now, as I feel like since it was first released 10 years ago, a wider variety of genre stories are being told in comics. It's much more acceptable to tell non-superhero stories, if you will, in comics. More so than ever, the art of sequential storytelling is such an acceptable way to tell any type of story now, even more so than it was 10 years ago. So I hope you all enjoy the interview. It's always great to see Dean and chat with him. And if you haven't read The Alcoholic, I really recommend it. It's not for the faint of heart. It's definitely for mature readers, but it's an interesting story, and I think we can all relate to it in different ways, having, you know, made bad decisions in our lives and having had to pick ourselves kind of up off the ground and keep moving forward and, you know, face each day as its own. Like, each day is a new day, right? Each day is a new day that we have to choose to get out of bed in the morning and, you know, choose to overcome the obstacles and adversities in our lives. So again, I think it's a great story. I really recommend it. And thanks to Dean for chatting with me. And thanks to you all for listening as always. I hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, this is Jace from the Comic Source coming to you once again live from San Diego Comic-Con 2018. I'm here with Dean Haspiel.
That's right, Dean Haspiel.
And we're going to talk a little Alcoholic. 10 years. I can't believe it's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years, but in a way, I think it'll be hopefully more successful coming out now than when it did come out, because it came out at a time when I don't think people were ready for something like that. You know, we had certain confessional comics, let's call it, or, you know, obviously semi-autobiographical memoir had been around, you know, since Binky Brown, and of course Harvey Pekar for 30 years. You know, he told his life story, every bit of minutia of it, you know. But, you know, and then Jonathan Ames had just started HBO's Bored to Death, and then later did Blunt Talk. So his star has risen, you know, and he has more of a fan base. I hope I have more of a fan base since 10 years ago, you know. But also, I mean, it's a weird subject, you know. If you think about it, it's all over the literary landscape. It's in your independent films. It's in your major films. Mm-hmm. But the only, I think, I mean, forgive my ignorance, but I feel like the only time it was addressed was in Iron Man, alcoholism,
right,
you know, with Demon in a Bottle. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, no one really talked about alcoholism in comics. You know, it's not, you know, there's still this stigma, I think, that comics are for kids, even though who I see are,
right,
you know, gray-bearded men like me at the comic shop. But, and, you know, some women. But, and the landscape is changing, absolutely. That's kind of a joke. But, you know, it's not necessarily made for kids, you know.
Right.
It is made for adults. But yeah, I feel like maybe this second, you know, this new anniversary edition will give it have a bigger boost, you know.
Yeah, so let's remind our listeners kind of what it's about, or maybe someone not familiar.
Right.
You know, I think I read it. I was a little late to the show. I think I read it in 2010.
Cool. Cool.
Well, thanks for picking it up. Anybody who's not familiar, what's
well, it's written by Jonathan Ames, who is known for writing essay collections, novels. He had written a column in the New York Press when I was reading his stuff originally. He was in Brooklyn for a long time and moved to LA a bunch of years ago to produce television because he got, you know, he did, as I was saying before, HBO's Bored to Death and then Blunt Talk for Stars. And it's, he likes to say it's fictional, but knowing him and having read his essays and having some insight, it's probably a little more than semi-autobiographical in a lot of ways. It's also, so it's a, it tackles a serious issue that is alcoholism. It shows the origin of how one becomes an alcoholic and what are the issues. And of course, it's not necessarily that the chemical, although chemistry is a part of alcoholism, but it's like, you know, what happens in your childhood? You know, what's happening around your parents, your best friends, you know, who are the kind of people you're trucking with, you know? And in a lot of ways, it's not judgmental. You know, he's not pointing a finger and blaming anybody, you know? He's kind of like an outlier who kind of falls in, you know, goes from like a suburban home lifestyle to wanting to be a writer, hanging around other misfits, and when that, you know, in New York City, and what happens is, you know, things are going to happen, right?
Yeah,
so life happens. Mm-hmm. And so, I, you know, and it gets to a certain point where he's struggling with the ideas of love. He kind of has a Yoda in the story, in the form of his great aunt. And she's a fantastic character, probably my favorite character in the book. And, you know, but he does meet, you know, nefarious types of people, and he does make a lot of mistakes. And it's very vulnerable and exposing. And again, he doesn't judge the other people. He also doesn't judge the alcoholic in you. And I feel like it has one of the best endings I've ever seen in a comic book, ergo a story.
Yes.
Where it involves, it not only does it say something about the author, but the reader too. It engages you at that very moment. What would you do? And I'm not going to spoil it, but what would you do at the end?
Yeah, and it's really appropriate because, as you know, alcoholism, you never stop being an alcoholic. You might stop drinking, but you never stop being
an alcoholic.
So the struggle is, you know, it goes on.
That's right.
And I agree with you about the timing of this 10th anniversary because, you know, it is a broader landscape now and people are coming to understand there is more than superhero comics.
Yes.
But also the themes that it explores as far as struggling with addiction, you know, weakness and not, you know, believing in yourself.
It's very, in certain ways, I would use the word emasculating.
Yeah,
in some ways, the book. And it's interesting because I had drawn Harvey Pekar's origin story, The Quitter. And that was about quitting what you couldn't be great at. Then I'm drawing this other guy's story about alcoholism. And I kept saying, the third one I want to do is that I want to call it The Lover. You know, and like have this really cool guy who's going around and everyone loves him. And it was kind of a joke. And it turned out to be a book called Cuba, My Revolution with Inverno Lopez, which we hope to also reprint in the future. Because again, we're talking about a time when, listen, I don't think anybody was prepared for Vertigo to be publishing, you know, DC Comics to be publishing these kind of books when they came out. I think that's where you would maybe, you know, seek it from like a Fantagraphics or Drawn in Quarterly, you know? But the landscape has shifted because of those publishers, because of those efforts. And I would like to see more of those be reprinted, those kinds of books, because I think when they came out, they were more of an anomaly, you know? And yeah, it's not Batman, clearly. It's not Spider-Man. It's not supposed to be, you know? But I also think that the culture has embraced the fact that comics is just another great delivery system to tell these stories.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So. I mean, sequential art from, you can go back to cave drawings. I mean, it's always been around, and I struggle sometimes with a little bit of a lack of acceptance in the North American market of these books, because the other cultures, you know, Japan.
Europe.
Europe
totally tackles stuff like this.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And everybody reads comics. Whereas here, people are like, oh, I love the movies. Then you'll love comics, man. Just give them a try.
You would think. You would think. And I know that it definitely has gotten better, but we still need to make the argument. You know? And I've been saying for a good 20 years, we actually have the library. You know, like, what do you like? I'm sure there's a comic out there in terms of that. And of course, start to read the stuff that you didn't know you liked.
Right, exactly.
Too, you know, and you get to that place, hopefully, as you mature, you know. But we actually have the library, and I'm really proud to have worked on this book, and I'm excited and thrilled that it's coming out again for a new audience, you know.
Yeah.
And even the ones who supported in the first place, there's some new stuff for you there, too, you know, so...
Yeah, and I know it's been years, but I wonder if you could go back and talk a little bit about what the collaboration was like with James.
Well, what was really exciting about working with Jonathan Ames is I learned that he's a Renaissance man. Meaning, when I first was introduced to his work is through his essay writing, and then I read a novel. So, you know, literature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts, you know, he gets this show Bored to Death. And the guy can write TV now. You know, he's really good at it, you know? I'm like, what? So can he do comics, you know? Which is, you know, where you have to rely on visuals in a lot of ways and not write, overwrite, you know, the panels and whatnot. And then he fucking did that as well, you know? He's so good. So I don't think there was a lot of hand-holding because he's just that good. He's able to yield to the virtues of the medium, mm-hmm. right? And exploit it well. And what was really cool is because we had a good friendship, it allowed us to be a little symbiotic. Even though I didn't grow up and I didn't hang out with him when he was a kid,
mm-hmm.
He was able to convey a lot of, you know, images in my head that I was able to then go and serve his story, you know, through my abilities, you know. So I think we had a really good collaboration. In that, you know, he was pushing me to draw stuff that obviously I had never drawn before. And then I was able to put it back in his lap and say, well, this is how I see it and envision it. You know, again, just to make sure that we were both serving the story.
Right.
At that point, you both have to let it go and move your egos to the side. And how is the story working? And that was one of my favorite collaborations.
Yeah, you mentioned Aunt Sadie. Earlier, and she's probably my favorite character in the book, too. So where did you draw your inspiration for the way, you know, kind of the overall look of the book, and particularly Aunt Sadie?
Well, I love black and white comics, you know, and I always feel that memoir lends itself well to black and white art and gray tones, and Lee Lowers did a great job gray toning the book. But Aunt Sadie was loosely based on the real Aunt Sadie. And I love the idea that, you know, one of the ways we introduce her or we talk about her is around some of these watercolor pieces of art that a lover tried to woo her with,
right.
Or was from a former lover, mm-hmm. I forget right now. And she was always giving, she was always, whenever Jonathan was down and out throughout his years growing up, he could always rely on her for counsel, you know? And again, I think maybe some of his non-judgmental qualities comes from her. And I describe her as his Yoda, you know, in a lot of ways. But she also drops some truth bombs. I mean, if there's any messaging in the alcoholic, it comes from her, you know? And so there's like these little truth bombs that happen that are like, oh, wow. You know, and he needs to think about this. In fact, I think toward the end of the book, she has said something that he needs to think about as he arrives to the last page of his journey, of this journey, you know? And I don't think I ever met her. But I'd seen pictures of her. And you know, Jonathan is also very theatrical. So he's very good at casting things and putting ideas into your head, and then, you know, you add your ideas to that, and then you come up with something you both never knew you could do,
right.
You know, on your own. So.
Yeah, and I feel like that Jonathan in the book is, you know, he gets himself in these situations and doesn't seem to be able to stop and kind of spirals. And then when he gets down there and he's kind of at the bottom of the barrel, he wallows in it.
Yes.
And really it's Aunt Sadie that's always throwing him the lifeline.
Aunt Sadie throws him a lifeline. In fact, the book starts with him having woken up in a car with a very small old lady who lives in the car with her cats and is trying to have sex with him. And I remember that was the splash page. That's how you wrote it, like this shocking moment. And what I added to it was, no, let's start first with just a close-up of your face, kind of slowly waking up from this like hungover fugue state, you know, and then you open your eyes and then you realize what is going, you know, what have I woken up to, you know? What is going on in my life that I'm here in this space right now? So in a way, it's shocking, it's funny. later on when you think about it, it's a little sad, you know. But I think what's great about what Jonathan does, and something I learned, is to impart serious, you know, stories, you have to find the levity, you know, so that through the comedy, you know, you can embrace the heartbreak, you know, in a lot of ways. So
yeah, and I think in that way it's relatable too, because I know there's been times in my life where I've looked around and said, how did I end up here?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and everyone can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether that happened to you or not doesn't matter. It's just the idea of what you just said is like, how did I get here? What's going on with that, you know? And then learning from it. You know, actually there's a moment in the book that I love where, and I've actually used this in my own life since then, where Monica Lewinsky, they're at Veselka in Lower East Side of Manhattan, and he walks to into the restaurant. There's Monica Lewinsky, and I don't remember if it was a dinner that he was having with a bunch of people, I forget in the book, but she has never eaten kielbasa, and she orders a kielbasa, and he's like, you gotta be kidding me, because he can't erase the idea of Bill Clinton and her, and then the, because he's a little silly too.
Yeah.
That's part of Ames's humor, you know. And at some point, she's like discussing how, like, oh, I really want to try this big kielbasa, and he astrally projects out of his body and hovers in the ceiling like Doctor Strange, you know, because it was just so shocking and yet funny and hilarious that he had to, you know, there were two of him in the room.
Yep.
One sitting there like frozen a deer in headlights, while the other version of him was like, you know, just like trying to survey the situation and like just reconcile what was happening. Again, totally silly, you know, but I thought it was a very funny part of the book. And then there's 9/11. 9/11 happens in this book. So I don't know. I there's a lot. It's a beautiful book, and I think it's perfect. You know, speaking of movies, I think it would make a great movie, of course. And I'm just really proud that and excited that I was able to, you know, have a friendship that I have with Jonathan, and for us to make something like this together. You know.
Yeah, and I really think, from my perspective, for as long as we exist as humans, this story is always going to be relevant.
Always.
Always.
It's perennial.
Yeah.
The actual story. I mean, I think when I convinced Jonathan to pitch an idea to Vertigo, I think he thought it was going to be a comic book series, you know, like 22 pages with cliffhangers and stuff. And I can imagine that now, actually, you know, maybe then it had to be, you know, shaped into the graphic novel format and test the waters, as it were. But I could see a monthly alcoholic comic, you know, or you know, we could have more like semi-autobiographical monthlies like that. I don't think anybody does that right now, you know.
Can't think of anything off the top of my head now.
I think at most PCAR was producing 2 issues a year of American Splendor.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have people doing that on a regular basis. But I feel little by small, with our blogging, our Patreons, everyone revealing everything, including their lunch.
Yep.
You know, I think eventually our superheroes might transition into our common man.
Yeah.
You know? So
I mean, again, it's just all about ideas and being able to relate, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the stories that we make up, the fiction of our society, is something that so perfectly captures what that society is at a certain point in time, you know.
Sure.
And when you can really judge a society by the fantasy stories they tell, by what look at their fiction and you can get a good idea of their values and you know what matters to them. So a book like The Alcoholic, it needs to be out there. It's a story that people need to read.
Well, thank you.
It's incredible and relatable, and I think we can all learn from Jonathan.
We can all from Jonathan's mistakes. But again, I think the beauty of it is the non-judgmental aspect of it, you know, from all sides. And I mean, at the end of the day, the finger you're pointing is really at yourself.
Exactly.
And that's part of the messaging, you know. And again, you learn from that and be open to that, you know. If you're going to be as vulnerable as, you know, excavating, you know, things from life, you know, look back at yourself once in a while. It's okay to do that, you know. We're never fully formed, I don't think.
No, you know? I don't think so either. Well, thanks for the time, Dean.
Hey, thank you, man.
Great to see you, as always.
Thank you.